So far, we've celebrated Christ's vulnerability, his invincibility, Christ in 2009, and this morning I'd like for us to celebrate Christ in 2010. So how can we celebrate Christ in 2010? What is it that we can do? How can we look forward to what Christ is going to do for us and in us and through us in this coming new year? Well, every good story has a central character, has a hero, and heroes face lots of different challenges or monsters, and they use different weapons to overcome their challenges. Whether it's a romantic story or an action story or a fantasy story, we're all aware of the hero and the quest. So what quest will you have for 2010? What is it that you'll be seeking to do or seeking to become in 2010? You have to have some sort of purpose. What is it that you hope for in this coming year? It's can be a real question, if you like. Okay, so that it would be better than 2009. So the question then is, in what way do you want 2010 to be better than 2009? What is it that you want to avoid? Or what is it that you want to actually achieve? What is your quest? Like a hero in a story. You're not sure? Quite too scared to share? Well, let's see how we go as we work through Psalm 62. Have a look with me. David is able to articulate, he's able to express what his desire is, what his quest is. This is what David wants. He says in verse 1 that he wants to, he wants his soul, that is the very fabric of his being, of who he is, to silently wait, or another way of understanding this is to rest in God. So he wants to rest, he wants to wait for God, because he understands that salvation comes from God. He understands that God is in fact his rock and his salvation, his defense. And in God, he says, I shall not be greatly moved. If you have a look at verses 5 to 8, he repeats much of this again. He says, my soul, so he's talking to himself, so he's instructing, reminding himself, he's saying, my soul, wait silently for God alone. My expectation or my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. In God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. And then he tells you what to do. He says, trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. So what does all this mean? Does it mean that David has a nice little geological rock collection at home and that God is his rock collection? Does it mean that his house is made of rock and it's really strong and it doesn't matter how big a gap storm comes along, it's not going to get blown over? What does he mean when he says that God is a rock, a refuge, a defense? What does David mean by that? How does, in what way will David not be greatly moved? What is it that David searches for? What is it that he wants in life? Is it to expand his kingdom? Is it to pay the bills? Is it to be the most successful and popular king of Israel? I don't think so. I think that David's desire is for God, to know God, to to really experience God in his own life as a person, as a father, as a husband, as a brother, as a worker, as a king, as a man. He wants God to be his safe place. Let me unpack this for you a little bit. Let me be a bit personal. I was thinking about this, and I asked Michelle, what is it that she hopes for in 2010? So I'm waiting for a response. And I want you to think about this. But one of the reasons why a lot of people call me the Rev is because I do everything fast. Everything's fast for me. I like living life on the edge. So I've got a motorbike, I've got a fast dog, I like fast games, my hobbies, everything's fast. Do you agree? Do you think that's the kind of character that I am? So one of the things that I think that I take from this psalm, and maybe in 2010, one of my desires would be that I might slow down. And I'm not even necessarily saying that I have to do less. I'm talking about my inner heart and my inner thinking is always 10 steps ahead of what I'm actually doing. And I think it would be really good for me this year to actually live more in what I'm actually doing at that particular time. So when I'm having a shave, I'm not writing 3 sermons ahead. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, actually slowing down in my own thinking and in my own, like, the conversation or this talking in my own head, I'd like to try and slow that down and live more in the moment. Just to eat breakfast and not read something and do and think something else at the same time, doing 3, 4, 5 things at the same time. Not to be afraid of taking my time. So if I take an extra 2 minutes shaving, is that going to make me rush more? Can I slow down just in terms of the way I walk around, take my time? Well, these are big challenges for the Rev. But they're the kind of heart things that I'm encouraging you to think about. In what way do you want to discover God and to learn to experience God? He's all around you and he's in you and he's working in and through you. But whether we perceive that, that's what we're talking about. David is saying his quest is to actually live and trust in God rather than in his own ability. And we tend to think that if we achieve more, if we take more on board, then we'll be more successful. David's saying, no, I'm going to rest in God. But what would that mean? Let's unpack that a little bit more. The world says to be popular you need to what? What are some of the values in the world? Have money. So how do you get money? You have to work really hard. What other things does the world trust in, hope for, strive for? Possessions. Yes, possessions. Yes, you have to work hard for that too. What else? Physical attraction. Yes, you have to be, I'm not even going to say beautiful because that wouldn't be right. You have to look a certain way depending on the current fashion. Isn't that right? So perms are out. Other hairstyles are in. So you have to keep up with the fashion. Unlike me, my friend Matt, he was up here this last week, and he says, "Man, you haven't changed your clothes." not meaning to. I do wash the clothes. Just the style of the clothes is always River's clothes, always the same sort of bright shirts. So we have to look a certain way, we have to behave a certain way, and we put our, and so that is success. So our sense of self-worth, our sense of well-being, the quest then is in those things. Money, possessions, looks, having friends, being popular, being successful. David says, hang on a minute, no. That is not a rock. That is not a safe place. Why would those things not be a safe place? What's wrong with money? It could disappear, yeah. You can have a global economic downturn, and you can, you know, the government makes us, forces us to put money in this, in our superannuation. I had a look, I got a, you know, a letter saying how my superannuation was going, you know, and not really. I thought, well, I would have done better if I'd hung on to that myself. I'm going backwards, and I feel for those of you who have to live off your savings. Beauty, that's flogging a dead horse, isn't it? It's just a downward slide. It's just not. Even people who are beautiful worry about that. And aren't beautiful, like beauty is very subjective, isn't it? What's beautiful for one person isn't beautiful for another. So you're on a hiding for nothing there. Being accepted, what's wrong with wanting to be popular? What's unsafe about that? It's not necessarily wrong to be popular. But if that's your quest for 2010, What's some of the difficulties you're going to encounter? You have to, your life and your happiness and your well-being depends on how other people are going to receive you, how they treat you, and so your life is really bound to other people. And so David's saying, "No, my soul is going to wait upon God. He is going to be my salvation." He's going to save me from needing money and needing possessions and needing popularity. I'm not saying that he doesn't actually have bills to pay, but that inner anxiety that we have inside our minds, that we do worry, how are we going to pay the bills in 2010? Or how are we going to afford to pay, get a house or get a new car, upgrade the computer, all those things. These are sources of anxiety that we don't actually have to have, even though we have bills to pay. How is that possible? It's possible because we're not going to think it's up to me to do all of this stuff, rather that God is going to help me. He's going to help me work hard to pay the bills. And I'm not going to worry about those things because I'm going to worry about enjoying God and glorifying him. So what are the so the challenges? Let me say that there are two main challenges that we can face in 2010. I found in verses 3 and 4 and 9 and 10. The first set of challenges that we will face are those which come to us from the outside in. They are things like circumstances. They are things like bills. They are things like bullies at school or bullies at work. There are things like the Gap storm that comes along and damages your house, and then you've got to wrestle with the insurance company, and all that heartache is stuff that just happens on the outside. You can see that in verses 3 and 4. He says, how long will you attack, O man? You're just like a wall that's going to fall over. And there are people who conspire and talk to each other about how they can cast you down. They might say nice things to your face, but there are lies underneath. There are people who are plotting against you. What kind of people plot against you? Some of you are amazing. You don't have enemies. And that's a great thing, but there are still people who plot against you. Can you think who they might be?
Some people who envy
Some people who might be jealous, that's right. They might not even be people who know you. But there are people who plot against you. There are people who lie to you, deceive you. What kind of people are they? Sorry, what? I didn't hear any of that. There's a murmur. The government. The government plots against us. Absolutely right. They say use less water, and then when you use less water, they put the price up because they need the same amount of revenue to keep up the services. That's pretty sneaky. The government, okay? And they do plot against us. Take more and more of our liberties away, don't they? If you want to do a Santa sleigh or something like that, there are all sorts of regulations and hoops that you have to jump through, and you have to have a certificate in being a Santa, probably. That'll come, don't worry. You'll have to do a TAFE course and have a red card or something, red and white card. So you've got that. Who else? The media? Absolutely. Advertising? There are some evil people out there who produce movies, who produce things, pornography, gambling, the tobacco companies are all working on how they can get you to be hooked and to use their products. And there's a sense in which when you consume their products, they're consuming your life. Because you work, you give up your life to go to work or go to school, and then you hand over that life for that pack of cigarettes or the bottle of wine or the pornography that you buy. And so your life is consumed, not just monetarily, but in terms of your thinking. How much time do you give to that? Outside in. The other challenge that we face in 2010, so if we're going to celebrate, we have to have the right quest. Make God your quest. You have to face the right monster or the challenge, which is evil outside and evil inside in verses 9 and 10. David is saying no matter how powerful or how low people are in this world, compared to God, they are lighter than vapor. So we need not fear people. And then he says, do not trust in oppression, nor vainly hope in robbery. If riches increase, do not set your heart on them. So the second evil that we need to face is the evil that is in or within our own hearts. So you've got evil outside, so people will try to rob you or deceive you or hurt you. But then you've got your own heart, which is evil, which desires to be rich. He says, look, if your riches increase, don't put your trust in them. Don't put your trust in oppression. You know, you might feel powerful when you put down your friends, or when you can boss them around, or when you get to have the power and control in your family or at work. But David's saying, don't trust in oppression. Don't be someone who misuses and abuses your authority. It is really the mark of a person in how they use or misuse their authority. What kind of authority am I talking about? Well, in a family, older brother or sister to younger brother or sister, they're bigger, they're more capable, and they're more powerful. They have more authority, more privileges. How do they use that? If they pick on their siblings, it says something about what they're trusting in, what their refuge is in. So there are two challenges, evil without and evil within. And here is what you can use to celebrate 2010. Here is what you can trust. Here is something that you can take away. He says this, God has spoken once and twice I've heard this. An interesting phrase. I think what he's conveying to us is that the next thing he's going to say is really, really important. power belongs to God. It does not belong to men or women. It does not belong to beauty. It does not belong to money or jobs or the misuse of power. Power belongs to God. And I think that's why David says in verse 8, pour out your heart to God. Sometimes as a pastor, I have people pour out their heart to me. It's a wonderful privilege. And sometimes I say to that person, have you said what you've told me to God? And sometimes I'm surprised that they haven't. Sometimes we find it easier, don't we? Because you've got a person there who's caring and actively listening to you, and you pour your heart out to them. David's saying, pour your heart out to God. God is the one who has the power to help you. To help you. Verse 12. To God is not just power, but what? What's the next thing he attributes to God? God is powerful and God is
loving.
He's the God of mercy. This is a good thing for us because he's not a tyrant. He's not an ogre. He's not a mean God with a magnifying glass burning you like an ant. God is loving. And God will render to each one according to his work. That is why that's why David says, truly my soul waits or silently waits for God. In God he trusts. And I think that sometimes, can I suggest, that often we focus on the evil outside, our work, our bullies, our circumstances. That is often our focus. And so our prayers are often, Lord, help me pay the bills. Lord, get me that promotion. Lord, help me lose weight. Help me be more beautiful. They're on the circumstances. But let me challenge you to pour out your heart and say, Lord, like me, I would say, Lord, and I hesitate. It's a very scary thing to say this, but Lord, help me slow down. That's a big thing for me to say, to ask God, Lord, help me slow down. To live more in the moment than in the future. What will you say? What will you ask God? Lord, what change do you want to see in yourself with respect to your relationship with God? As a pastor, that's my concern. Not so much the outward stuff, but more the inward change. It will change your outlook on your whole life. And I would say that in 2010, it may be worse than 2009, circumstantially speaking, but it may be better because of your own outlook, your own change of heart. So celebrate 2010 by committing it to Christ and resting in him. Amen.